Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians that are just trying to figure it out, man. Trying to, man, and non-binary person, you know, for all the people. We're trying to figure it out, not just for ourselves, but also for all of you, our listeners, no matter how you identify. We're reporting our wins, our losses, our matches, our draws, our no-shows, our forfeits.
Everything. Yeah, end of summer, the no shows are hot. They are coming fast and furious. But yeah, we're here. We finished our 10-day booking challenge.
We did. Yeah,
we did. Till I collapse. I got to throw in an Eminem reference since we're leaving the people wanting.
That's
hot,
true.
Ridiculous music references. I started out hot last week with the booking challenge.
Yeah.
First 7 days were pretty good. It was about a show a day. And then
this is amazing. That's amazing.
It all falls down.
It hit the wall. I meant to ask a clarification on this. First of all, so did you get any more than seven, or you after that?
I ended up getting, so when I was in Chicago, I just booked a show just by talking to a person, which, what a concept. Can you imagine such a thing? Just like
I don't like that at all. I don't.
Hey, man, you want to do this thing sometime? Sure. Do we shake hands, or do I send you a thank you email, or what do we do?
Yeah. So someone saw you perform at the show, and then they wanted to put you on their show, or walk us through it. Walk us through how human interaction happens.
So I booked an old friend and Limestone alum, I believe, Michael Myers.
Yes.
To do my show in Chicago. And then he was like, hey, man, are you, if you're ever, he did the nice thing, was like, if you're ever coming back through Chicago, hit me up. I have a weekly. I was like, now that you mention it, I got this booking thing that I'm trying to do. So I'm going back to Chicago this fall. So I'm going to book a bunch of Chicago shows just to.
Yeah. It's your linchpin. You've got that one now. Is that, what is that one called? It's, is that the one with the really great wings?
Yeah. It's like the pizza place.
High Dive or something like that.
It's in that neighborhood. I think I forget the name of it, but. Yeah,
I was excited to hear that he had that show back again, because I really love that show. I've never headlined it. I just did a spot on it one time, and the wings, you know, people always like, oh, they got the best wings. Their wings, like, is one of those few times where like, all right, this is, lives up to the hype of what everybody.
It's
says.
Legit,
you know. Yeah, it's good.
I do hate. We have the best wings. You got to try our wings, because they're never the best wings.
Yeah.
Like, what's that mean?
Maybe
what's that mean to people?
The best wings, because I think Mike buys them for the comics. I think that's why they're the best.
I do like a free wing. Free wing will get you in the top 10.
Well, I actually hit Michael up about that show, not in person, but just through the magic of social media, and I've yet to hear back from him. So apparently that's where I messed up. So. So, you know, hopefully I'll hear back from Michael soon. You know, he was a little busy. He was out there pressing the flesh, doing those bookings in real time. Crazy, man. Crazy.
A simpler time.
Yeah.
He showed me a video of his car getting absolutely annihilated while it was parked. So his car was parked outside of his apartment, and someone's Ring camera got like this RAV4 that just, no brakes, didn't slow down, just T-boned it. Just his car, like dead on, dead center his car. And you can see like the wheels turning in the driver's mind, even though you can't see the driver because it just sits there for a second before it starts to pull away.
Yeah.
And then drives off.
Now, so, here's my question. Do you think that was the comic who, you know, had messaged him about getting a show and he didn't get back to him in a timely manner? Do you think that that was...
the warning shot?
Yeah.
You drive a RAV4, Matt?
Well, not anymore.
Ditch the evidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he might be a little busy. That's all.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, my our condolences go out to Michael and his car. It was not me. That was just playing a little funsies. So you wound up with 8, is that correct?
I round out yep. 8 out of the 10.
Now here's a question that we did not clarify. Now, are you counting each individual show or just each booking? Like, for example, if you got a club weekend where you got to do four shows, is that four bookings or just one booking?
No, that's one booking.
Okay.
I count it as one booking. I could see both sides of this argument, though, because, you know, the small
In that room... case, I did not do great. This, I was feeling pretty good about the challenge until you said that. And then I was like, nope. Guess well, I didn't like do so hot.
The small room headliner gets the headline for two shows that weekend. And right. the real
that's
headliner...
One, that's one booking.
Yeah, yeah. Gets the headline for five. So okay. I count it as one.
What was your case, in that case, I need to recount real quick. Hold on.
Give me, I want both numbers.
No, let's see. So I had booked one, two, three, four. Those are two different cities, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. Okay. So yeah, it's either, I got 10, but mine was also not in the 10 days. I needed a couple extra days. So, cause it's been two weeks since we first talked about this on the podcast. So it's actually been 14 days and I have ended up with 12 bookings.
My band is back.
And a lot of it really came in just in the last 2 days or so.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, again, be patient, you know, like I said, I'm joking around about Michael not writing me back or whatever, but like, it's easy to just be like, oh, it's been 3 days and they haven't written me back. They're busy, you know, because not jumping the gun and not like being a pest, you know, there were people that, like, I messaged or like, yeah, let me see what I can do. And then I just left them alone. And then like a week later, they hit me up. I go, okay, here's where I'm at. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely worked out. But the challenge was great, man. And it's really kind of reinvigorated me in a way to work on bookings, particularly for next year, which is good. And I think probably won't fade for another like 2 days or so. And then I'll go back to being, I'll be like, that's fine. I got got a couple things.
Everything is fleeting.
Yeah.
It was nice to put like a time limit on this. Obviously, you know, the 10 days, you're going to see the residuals come in, which is what booking is. And I think we both knew that going into it. The challenge was more to make sure that we were sending out bookings for a specific time period. The reason I don't want to like continue to do this is because it is taxing. It wears you down. If you're always in a pattern of waiting and not hearing back, that beats you down mentally. Yeah. So I think it's good to have like these stretches where you're just like got some energy going. And for me, being a competitive person, I was like, oh, we'll just call it a challenge. That way I'm challenging myself to try to get booked or at least do the work to try to get booked. So
yeah,
I feel fired up and energized and also like I got to work on this new shit because I got shows that I got booked. So it's the snake eating its own tail, if you will. That's an analogy that people say, right?
Yep, that is an analogy. You nailed it. That is both an analogy and the correct usage of the analogy. So good job. Yeah. I thought it was great. I do want to kind of like get a few more things on the books for 2024 before I kind of let up, because some of the stuff wasn't for 2024. It was kind of like filling in little gaps here and there for the rest of this year as I get more confident with being able to be away for a couple of days at a time and stuff like that. But yeah, man, it's been good. And and also I've been getting on that Dwight energy. I've been going to the gym again. First time in forever. When I take my brother for his physical therapy and occupational therapy, I go to the Planet Fitness down the street. I watch a little TV. I get in the aqua massage chair, you know.
Nice. Eat your Tootsie Rolls.
Eat my Tootsie Rolls. I think about getting on the elliptical. Looks fun, you know.
Yeah.
But it's also just fun to watch while you're eating Tootsie Rolls. It's fun.
Yeah. While you're eating your little treats.
Yeah.
Eat your little candies. I like the elliptical. It's I've got creaky knees. I got athlete knees that, you know, you wear cleats for 10 years and then you wonder why you can't walk when you're 30. So the elliptical takes the pressure off of like actual running. So I dig it.
Yep. It's good. It's I am one of those people that struggles with the rhythm of the elliptical.
I can
like
see
it. It takes me a good Like those first 90 seconds on elliptical, not pretty.
Finding the motion.
Like trying to get all my limbs to work in unison. It's not my strong point, which is why I'm in comedy.
Yeah, you're a head turner. Turning heads.
There was, okay, we've not done a This Motherfucker in a while. So I do want to nominate a This Motherfucker for this episode of the podcast.
Oh, please.
And it was actually two motherfuckers. There were two white dudes, probably like honestly not much older than me, that were next to each other on the treadmill and treadmills. And they're on the treadmills right by like the sort of like the two cross nexus of like the aisles. Like you had to go past them to go to the water, go to the, you know, the restroom to, when you first come in, like they're really prime spot. And these motherfuckers are just like, think they're being hilarious and bullshitting with people as they walk by. And then just like asking ladies, like, what's that on your leg? You got a bug on your leg? And like, just kidding. Like that kind of shit. And I was just like, these motherfuckers. Like,
oh no, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. And I don't have headphones that work on my phone right now. Like all the headphones I have are like this, like plug-in ones or whatever. So I just had to hear it. I just had to listen to these motherfuckers.
Oh my God. I have zero patience for that shit. That is like, because when I go to the gym, it's like phone is off outside of just music playing. I don't answer calls or text or get on social media. It's just like,
that's why you fell behind in the challenge, my friend. I'm
Beats by Dre.
I'm on the bicycle just making deals, dude.
Yeah, that's, I fell behind because I didn't do the 14 day challenge.
That too.
That's it.
Oh yeah, you rocked me in the 10 day. Like in the 10 day, I think I maybe got 4 or 5 in the 10 day. So yeah, you definitely won the challenge. Yeah. Actually,
you're ahead though. You're ahead. Yeah. I don't like that. These motherfuckers. For now.
Yeah, but yeah, that's this week's These Motherfuckers.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. So that's where we are in the challenges. We do have a couple of questions that come in. Thank you, everybody who has written in some questions. It's nice to have like a backlog for us to work on for the next couple episodes. Before we get into this week's question of the week, though, let's talk real quick. You did have your show up in Chicago. How did it go?
I did. It was great, man. It's a show that I've been running for a while. It's even the comics that I've had, they're like, this show's cool because it's so sporadic. And I was like, it's great because if I don't know when it is, nobody else knows when it is. That way my inboxes stay clean and clear. but
I never thought of that. But yeah, it's the Brigadoon of shows. Like, when's it going to reappear? We don't know. It's
Yeah. Even my Googman House show here in Indianapolis. It's like, I don't know, man. People will hit me up and be like, hey, can I do that? And I was like, I'll let you know when I confirm a date.
Mm-hmm.
And so I am the evil that I want to rid the world of.
Mm.
Once again, I'm sorry, man. I got nothing for you right now, playa. That's my internet voice.
Yeah.
It was good, man. It's funny because it's the end of summer, so turnouts are going to be lighter by nature. Mm. And we had about 23-24 people there, which in that room, it feels nice, and they were all good. Everybody was in a great mood. Those shows, you know, this, like, you run a show long enough, it kind of runs itself. You book who you want on it, and you don't really worry about the quality. So that's how I book these. And Chicago is super easy. Like, you know, people have to go early because they're leaving to go do a spot at the Laugh Factory, or they're going to run a show, or they're coming late. So that's the only juggle part. And then I do like 15 minutes up top, and it's not like work, you know what I mean? So I think when I started these BrewTube shows, I was like, I'm going to do a bunch of these in a lot of different cities, but it's too stressful.
Yeah.
Like that dream is gone. I'm good with my Chicago space. I'm good with my Indianapolis space. I could see myself getting one more, but yeah, that would be the max.
Yeah. Running shit is stressful. Like, nothing but love to all the promoters out there that keep doing shows and keep shows going, even if they're irregular shows like yours. You know, it's a lot of work, and it's way more stressful running a show than it is just doing a show. You know, there's always the stress when you're the headliner on a show, like, because then it's kind of on you if nobody shows up, you know, particularly in a club, you know, in a club situation. That's a stressful position to be in. But man, running shit like you're that you have that stress every single time.
Yep.
You know, and so yeah, a lot of love to everybody out there running shows. It's like, yeah, I did it for a while, and I, you know, and I still do the don't tells every now and then or whatever, but yeah, I was like, limestone's enough. I don't need this kind of stress more than once a year, you know.
Yeah. Well, you run your year's worth of shows in one weekend. So you've been doing that for 10 years. So that's
that's also why I look about 12 years older than I am too.
You've given back.
I've given back. That's right. I'd like to think that I have. Yeah. Did you have any shows? No, I didn't have any shows this weekend. I did go out though. Louisville was hopping, man, with friends of ours. So at the various clubs, just friends of the pod, we had Gabe Kia at Laugh Louisville. We had Brian Miller was at the Caravan, and then Jeff Tate and Blake Hammond were at Planet of the Tapes. I could only go out one night, so I caught the early show at the Caravan with Brian, and then I caught the late show at Planet of the Tapes, and it was great. It was like, and then Gabe came to the late show at Planet of the Tapes. I got to hang out with him too.
Oh, good.
Which was good. And it was a solid hang, and everybody was, it was just good. It's just kind of great watching your friends get up there and crush.
Yeah.
You know? And so in the late show at Planet of the Tapes was kind of a smaller crowd because, you know, again, summer, you know, their early show was packed. I got there kind of like right as the early show was ending, and it was like I was gonna pop in and watch. I was like, I really can't unless I just stand in the hallway. Like, that's how packed out it was. So they still had a good weekend and everything, but man, it was a ton of fun, man, going and doing that shit. And then Sunday was my birthday, and so Denise came down and we went and saw the Barbie movie.
Bum, 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 bum. Happy birthday. That was
my big birthday.
That is alpha birthday activity right there.
That's, you know, it's the rite of passage for every man when he turns 50 is he should go see the latest Greta Gerwig film.
Did you enjoy it?
It was great. It was great. Yeah. I thought it was so smart and well done. And I told Denise too, I was like, you know, it's yes, obviously it's a, you know, this movie about a toy that, you know, lives for real and all that kind of stuff. But there was still, even in the context of what they presented, like, this is the world and this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. There were still moments that were so weird.
Yeah.
Like, have you seen it?
Yeah, I went to see it. Yeah, like the week it came out.
So like the battle of the Kens.
Yeah.
That then transforms into a dance routine in a negative space. Like, that dance routine could have been on the beach.
Oh,
but all of a sudden you're just like an
incredible.
Yeah. It was just like that kind of creativity's running throughout. I thought was really, really, really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And anything I can do to piss off the Ben Shapiro's of the world, I'll fucking go again this weekend.
We've talked about this. I think we talked about it when I said that I want to see it, but I just really enjoyed people losing their shit. Grown men who this movie is not made for. Yeah. It's really a movie made for everybody. Everybody should see it, but like losing their collective minds that it's poisoning the youth, the minds of young girls everywhere, and making men femboys. It's so wild.
Man, it what's so crazy to me is, like, you know, I understand why Ben Shapiro does it. He does it to get paid, right? Yep. His outrage is his currency. That's his business, right? Mm-hmm. But the people who are just in the comment section who do not make money by being outraged, like, they're the suckers. They're the idiots. Like, oh, you're working your way to an early heart attack over this bullshit that has nothing to do with. Yeah, it's just like crazy. I also kind of wanted to go see Blue Beetle, even though it doesn't look good, just because it's the first like superhero with an all Latino cast and like a Latino director and everything. I was like, you know, let's put that up the charts and see.
Let's see.
Build the wall, motherfuckers, come out of the woodwork. You know,
I was gonna say, do they even show that in Kentucky? It's like, not screened. Our friend Spark Tabor said he went to see it. He said it was better than expected.
Okay, that's
good. Cheesy, like all origin stories are, like that cheesy humor, like that. But better than expected. It looks bad, and that's from someone who watches every superhero movie ever made. I just watched The Flash.
I also heard that was bad.
Oh my god, dude! It's like, it's just DC's in some try hard.
Yeah.
Like, you see comedians that just try the hardest, and you're like, it's never going to click for you, buddy.
Yeah.
And that's what DC is.
That's where DC is right now.
Just like, I don't think it's going to click. Like, there's just a scene where Wonder Woman's in it for 15 seconds. She just shows up at the end of a battle, and then she's like, all right, peace. I was like, all right, cool.
Y'all got this, right? Okay, good. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of shit. I don't know. Yeah. Like, yeah. That is like, I like how you're trying to wrestle it back to comedy, because we definitely got off into the weeds there a little bit. We're talking about movie reviews, but
I'm very good at this.
You are good at this. And you actually brought it in a way that actually ties perfectly into the question of the week. So should we jump into it?
Let's do it.
All right. This is part two of Juan Arellano's email that he sent last week. We did the first one. We're going to do the second one. There's also a third question, which maybe we can get to. I don't know why I'm calling it maybe. Yeah, a little Chuck Berry there for you. but let's tackle number two here, which does tie into the point that you just made. Once again, for everybody who didn't hear last week's episode, Juan's questions are sort of referencing the Steve Martin book, Born Standing Up, where Steve Martin talks about his career and also his philosophy in comedy. So number two question is, later on in the book, Steve also writes, thankfully, perseverance is a great substitute for talent. We all have met comics in our lifetime that it seems no matter how much effort they put in, they seem to hit a barrier in their development. In your experience, what is blocking these comedians from getting to the next level? Zack Snyder. Okay. Anyway. Or the lack of Zack Snyder. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever it is. No. In these cases, will perseverance eventually make up for a lack of talent? And this is exactly what you're talking about. We definitely know comics. I'll just say this. I saw a comic recently who, not a headliner, just somebody that was on a show, and so bad.
Yeah.
And this person, every time I've seen this person over the years, very bad. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't an open mic. This was a weekend type show that they should have been, you know, bringing out the A material. And at some point, either from talking to them or later on in that night or in their set, I can't really remember, but I found out they'd been doing comedy for the same amount of time I have, 15 years. And in my head, I was just like, how is it possible to still be this bad? Now, I don't know this person super well, so I don't know if they have been doing comedy 15 years and that's twice a year. For 15 years, they actually get up on shows, because we met those comics. You know those comics.
Yep.
That do, you know, like, I've been a comic for 8 years, and they do one show every 8 years.
Yeah. They went last at the open mic, but they headlined it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Or they do the contest. They do whatever the local contest is that once a year. You know. But we also know comics that have put in the work and grinded and just do not advance. And so I think perseverance is definitely key to, you know, getting somewhere in this business. And I think it can make up for a deficit of talent, but there also has to be talent. You can't be all perseverance and no talent.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there are some people that can be all talent, no perseverance, and just get very lucky.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people that are all talent and no perseverance who never move up the ranks, never even headline their own local club because they have zero perseverance.
Right. They're
funny as shit. They get on stage, super charismatic, they can riff, they can do all that kind of stuff, and then they just don't put in the work. So I don't think that one can completely save the other one, you know, but I will say that perseverance, the right kind of perseverance, can make you a better comic if you're using that time wisely, you know. Like, people that are still doing the bad first 5 minutes that they wrote years later, that's not the type of perseverance that's going to make you any better. You know, perseverance isn't just getting up on stage time. It's also writing, rewriting, editing, knowing when to drop. Like, that's, you know, being self-critical, you know, in a productive way, not in the normal way that comics are self-critical. but yeah. So that, in my opinion, and from people that I've seen, you know, I don't think perseverance alone can do it. I think there has to be some talent, but I think perseverance can definitely make a decent comic a good comic, or at least get them more opportunities, because places will book you if you're decent. If they know, like, you're not going to sink the ship, you know, what's the famous Alex Stone motto that's been passed around through Midwest comics for a long time, which is like,
be so good they can't.
They'll be so good they can't deny you. No, I think it's also, he's got one that I heard secondhand, that was, which was, be nice, be funny, be on time. Mm-hmm. And if you're two of those three things, you'll get work.
Yeah. You're so far ahead of the field.
Yeah, exactly. But what do you think about the balance between perseverance and talent?
Yeah, I always get like so philosophical with these as I fix my ring light. Just because like when I hear comics ask about like getting to the next level or asking about like perseverance, that's always dependent upon what your definition of what you want to do, where you want to be, mm-hmm. where you are now is. I guess I'll speak to myself personally. Like I'm always trying to get to the next level. I don't know what point is it just you've been grinding versus you are persevering in this? Like that mm-hmm. sounds kind of negative to me. Right, man, he's plugging away. He's persevering.
He's hanging in there.
I'm always looking to go like one step further. So when, and I don't like comparing myself to other comics that are not in the same mind space that I am of mm-hmm. like, all right, I'm just trying to be the best comic that I can be. And that's okay. Like that's fine if that's not what you want to do. I think for Juan being new or any new comic listening to this in particular, it is what we say and repeat damn near every episode. It's keeping a good head on your shoulders, not taking things personally, which is, we say it all the time, but it's a difficult thing to do. I think the perseverance comes in the business aspect of like taking no's. Okay, I didn't respond to this shitty comment on Facebook. That's perseverance. I can maintain a good reputation by not doing dumb shit. That's perseverance. Mm-hmm. You know, especially like when you start getting paid work, but it's like not like you might still be losing money mm-hmm. and you've got the day job and you're waking up early as hell to go to that day job and then driving 3 hours to do 5 minutes. That's perseverance.
Yeah.
Or doing shit like we just did, like this 10-day challenge, because we need a little extra boost like motivationally and mm-hmm. energy wise, that's perseverance as well. So it has yeah. a lot of different ways that it can package itself. The talent thing is like, exactly. I mean, I agree so much with what you just said. It's like, it's either there or it's not, but comedy is so subjective that a lot of times it does not matter as much as the perseverant aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So someone for like someone like, we all think Steve Martin is like one of the best performers, one of the most unique performers. So for him to have that thought of like, oh, I'm a talentless hack, so I just yeah. persevere through it.
Yeah.
That should give everybody hope.
Right.
You know what yeah. I mean? Like, like people are gonna comment on your clips, shitty stuff. You mm-hmm. gotta like like even today, I posted a clip and people were like, "Oh, you think you're smart talking about books, huh?" I didn't get on here to hear jokes about books.
Oh man, yeah. I would say this too about the perseverance assignment, because there is a part of Juan's question that I think we haven't really addressed, which is he's talking about the comics that it, no matter how much effort they do put in, they seem to hit a barrier in their development, and asking like, what do we think are reasons that sort of that happens, that block comedians from moving up or moving on in their development. First and foremost, I'll say that, you know, there's a lot of little adages about comedy that you hear along the way. And one of the truest ones that I've ever heard was that the plateaus will kill you. Mm-hmm. And this is usually about career-wise, where you get stuck as a feature for year after year after year, and you can't seem to move up to headlining. And it just feels like, this is it. I've hit the ceiling. You know, this is as far as I'm going to go. Or then you move up to headlining, but it's just you're headlining the same small rooms every time. You can't get into new clubs. Like, it happens over and over again throughout a comedy career. And that's the hardest time to stay motivated and mm-hmm. and to persevere through it. But then also the same thing creatively too, you know, like a lot of times we get into ruts with our writing And it's those plateaus, the same thing where you like, you know, I've had several conversations with really, really good comics who are just like, I fucking hate everything that I'm writing right now. Everything I write is garbage right now. Yes. They're, you know, they're going through that section. And so I think part of it is there's a normal thing that happens. Very few people just keep going up, 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 up nonstop. You know, you have these moments and then it kind of seems like, okay, maybe this can be it. And then something happens, or just after years of doing it, you do get to move up in a couple of places here and there and things like happen. The other side of that, however, though, is there are definitely comics that can't get out of their own way, you know, who do talk shit too much and burn a bunch of bridges, and they want to know why they're not getting into things is because, like, you know, like, we'll just use the festival thing as an example. You and I are friends with a lot of the producers of other comedy festivals, right? Our peers, you know, and we've had people share information with us, and we've shared information with other people like, yo, this person is a piece of shit for these reasons, right? Non-comedy related, usually. Yep. Just usually like, and you do enough shitty shit, or you're just a nightmare and you're a fucking pain in the ass to deal with, and you're, you know, you think that you come in with a diva attitude and you're an opening act.
Yep.
That shit don't fly with a lot of people, and you will start closing those doors for yourself left and right.
Yep.
You know, and then there's other things where, you know, comics that get too drunk before they go on, or they get too high before they go on. It's like, you know, like, you have to treat, if you want this to be your job, you have to treat it like a job before it's your job.
Yep.
You know? And so there's all kinds of ways that people will just not get out of their own way, you know, getting up there, stepping all over their dick, you know, just like, yo, just kind of like, so I think those are other reasons that people hit a level and don't advance anymore is A, people don't want to put up with their bullshit at a higher level, and B, like, their personal drama and personal habits don't allow them to become a better comic.
Yeah. I'll add is, like, you know, I think this plays a part into it, but be careful of what rooms you try to get good in. You know what I mean? Like, don't go to the shittiest open mics and try to kill with material you think is going to kill in that room. And then be surprised when you go to an actual club open mic and you're like, oh, why do these people look at me like they hate me?
Yeah.
It's like, early on, just be careful. Even like when you're starting to go on the road and like a lot of the gigs are shitty and they're not like, the sets are going to be rough. Like, your survival skills are going to have to kick in. But I think it's good to stick to your guns, stick to your material, and not try to play down to different audiences, especially like early on. Like, you should feel free to express who you want to be. And I think that's like the quickest way to find, quote unquote, your voice and to know what works in different atmospheres. So be careful of that.
Yeah. It is a tricky thing because, yes, we don't want to tell comics what kind of comics to be, but if you are in like those meat grinder rooms and it's just other comics, and the way that you're getting laughs is by doing the most crazy, extreme, you know, like, edgy or dirty joke or something like that, that's going to make other comics laugh. You know, people, the real world doesn't have the same sense of humor as comedians does, right? You know, or, you know, like, you are super filthy, works in this, your neighborhood bar that has the open mic and it's a bunch of bar flies and they love super filthy stuff. Great. If you want to be a super filthy comic, but just understand that's also going to greatly limit your opportunities moving forward, because not every club is going to want that, you know? And so it's much better to be a little bit more well-rounded, have a little bit of everything in your toolkit of what you can do, you know? But, and also, you know, like, being realistic with what's going on with your comedy career and being willing to make the changes to go where you want to go, I think is big. There is a comic, I don't want to say their name, but this was very clearly what happened. I thought this comic was great. They were in the Chicago scene at a time when the Chicago scene was a lot of yelling.
Yeah.
This is a lot of these bar shows. And so aggressive comics, a lot of crowd work, like big energy yelling, like kind of like swaggery, like, you know, fuck you kind of comedy.
Yeah. Let me get your ass put ketchup on a hot dog.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. So, And this comic was not that. They were very quiet. They're very thoughtful. And they couldn't get shit in Chicago. And they moved and then got in a scene that was like more receptive to their style. Mm-hmm. And they just went bump, 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 bump. And, you know, touring and doing Edinburgh, you know, this year. And like, yeah. you know, just like they had to find where they fit in. And you may not fit in your local scene. And if you really want to do this, then you might have to want to move.
Yeah.
You know, because scenes do kind of have personalities to a certain extent. Yeah, a room here and there might be different, but there's an overarching kind of sensibility for a place.
Yeah.
You know, and so either A, being like versatile and flexible enough to kind of roll into a spot and at least survive, mm-hmm. you know how to take like, all right, this is like a dirtier, like a angry room.
Yeah.
You know, with years of experience under your belt, Brent, you know, you can be a Brent Terhune mostly clean comic and go in and still crush in those rooms because you got mm-hmm. the experience at that point. But yeah, coming up, be thoughtful about how you're developing your style for sure. I mean, that's the thing that there's anybody new listening to this, try to do as many different types of rooms as you can.
Yeah.
Like I always thought, like if, you know, if I did a joke in three different rooms and it, you know, if I did, particularly my early shit was talking about growing up in a, you know, trailer and being like poor white trash, basically being like a liberal hillbilly, essentially.
Yeah.
Long before that became a very lucrative social media brand.
You missed it.
That I did not capitalize on when I should have. When I did that, you know, my 30 minutes, my first 30 minutes of that, like at the Sinking Ship featuring for Chris Shaw and his album release show. And it was like 98% Black people in the audience.
Yeah.
And it still worked. I was like, all right, these jokes are good. You don't have to be a cuck liberal hillbilly like
snowflake
shit, right? Like it was like, all right, these jokes are just good. So, and that's a thing, like, but if I had only ever done that shit in Bloomington at the Attic in this very liberal room,
mm-hmm.
I probably would not have gotten the jokes good enough to where they could go to this Black room or to this hillbilly VFW hall,
yeah,
where they may not agree with my politics, but the joke's good enough that you're gonna survive. So absolutely, those are things that I think good for everybody to think about, you know. If you feel like you're plateaued and you're not getting where you want to go, might be time for a fresh start, or you know, just understand that this is part of it and keep plowing through. But yeah, if you've been doing it for 15 years and you are still real bad,
we're gonna talk shit about you.
Maybe persevering is not for you. Maybe persevering is just a punishment to the audience.
Oh, we'll name names on our Patreon.
Yeah. I would just be like, yo, dog, I would just be saying this is your first time doing stand up every time that you get up there and just like go for that sympathy shit.
I always thought that was funny at an open mic when the host would be like, it's their first time on stage. I was like, you're not doing that person any favors.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on the room. I think when you do that stuff, like at the Attic open mic, there is a like, oh, we're going to like root for this person. You know, like I think some rooms will give you a little extra love if they think it's your first time, but not other rooms.
Not at like, Mo Better Mondays. They don't give a damn.
Let's go ahead and take question number three from Juan, because it's, I think we've kind of touched on it a little bit. And I think it'll be a good way to wrap up this episode as well. And again, thank you, Juan, for sending in so many questions. I do really appreciate it. It's good to get the spread over two episodes of the podcast. The third question is, lastly, something that stuck with me from the book, but I didn't really get, was when Steve writes, quote, it was easy to be great, like lucky cards in poker. You can count on them. Nights of great performances occurring over time. What was hard was to be good, consistently good night after night, no matter what the abominable circumstances, end quote. He's asking, what does this quote mean to you? Does it ring true? And how have you seen this in your comedic journey? You want to take it?
Yeah, it's like what you just said. It's like, I used to pride myself when I first started going on the road, doing all these small towns in Indiana, Brazil, Indiana, and going to Evansville, and then also being able to go to like the White Rabbit, which is a very liberal room, and the Attic in Bloomington, going to these college towns and being able to at least be good, as Stephen Wright says. Like sometimes, you know, the goal shouldn't always be to kill. Mm-hmm. To me, that quote used to mean like, I'm going to go and do the job and I'm going to be good and it's going to be a win for me. My philosophy over that for myself at least, has changed in the last few years, where it's like, I don't think I have to do good in every room. Now, this is obviously a different political landscape than when Stephen Wright said this quote, but
He's Steve Martin, or are you talking about the Stephen Wright quote? He's still asking about the Steve Martin book, but
said Stephen Wright.
Steve Martin. I'm tired. Steve Martin. These are all Steve Martin quotes.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
From the pale old pasty white guy that said this quote.
Yeah.
Insert filler. From when Steve Martin said this quote.
Steve Bannon said this quote.
This is a Steve Bannon quote. I think for me personally, I still want to do well in every room, but I don't take it as much of a L if I go to, guess it, middle of nowhere, Michigan.
Yeah.
And take that loss. But I also do like more political humor than a lot of other people and talk about race and stuff like that. So I've allowed my concept of what doing well is evolve and change. Like I want, like when I go to Sagatuck, I know it's going to be a hot start and then be mild in the middle and going to be a great end. And I know that because I'm in control of what happens in the room.
Right.
And I think that is more important to me, like absolutely crushing. To me, that's being good. Like when I watch comics do that type of stuff, I'm like, that's a really good comic, or that's a great comic with ability. And then, you know, that's how I view being good, being consistent every night.
Right.
Also, like with, sorry, just one more. I like with with doing the special or putting clips online, the whole goal is for people to come and see my brand of comedy. So it's less about chance of it's live performance. It's always like you're always going to have crazy people in the audience, but I think developing what your definition of good each night is and allowing it to kind of evolve over time are strengths and help keep you sane. Rather than I gotta go up and kill every single night or I'm an abject failure.
Yeah, I think you really touched on something key to this, which is you talked about when you're up there, you're in control of the room, right? And that is really key. And I think one of the things that you know, anyone who's a pro and has been doing it as long as we have and has done the variety of rooms that we have can do well. And almost every, it's very rare that we have like the big L's, right? It's like, we can at least do good. We can at least do fine. We can do good. You know, it may not have been great. We may not think it was good, or like, but we did fine, you know, do well and be good consistently. And a big part of that is the confidence that you bring to the stage. And a big part of that is, you know, really working on your act. You know, as the old saying goes, if you take care of your act will take care of you, you know, and that doesn't mean just do the same act forever. That really means just really put the work into your writing, your performance. Again, like there are people that are very funny, but they're kind of up there just kind of, you know, just saying the jokes. They're not performing the jokes. And when I say that, I don't mean you have to be Kevin Hart running all around high energy. The Stephen Wright, aforementioned Stephen Wright, his super low energy is a performance technique, right? He's performing that material. And so just really focusing on the fundamentals of the writing, always making sure the jokes are as strong as they can possibly be. And then just, you know, working it, you know, that is how you get consistently good, is you try that material in a lot of different rooms. You consistently make it better, stronger, drop the weaker jokes, put in new jokes that are stronger, so it's strong all the way through. You know, that's all just through repetition. And it is hard that is harder than just the, you know, we've all had those shows where like you can't do anything wrong, the room is so hot. Yeah. You know, you're just, you know, they're just completely the right audience for you. You can fuck around, goof off. They're great. But yeah, walking into a tough room and being good is hard. It's hard work. And it's, but it's also crucial work if you want to do this from the Midwest or from some other non-industry place.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, if you are in those bigger scenes and you can just hopefully get discovered, you can be doing a very niche style of comedy. Great.
Yeah.
Good for you. Awesome.
Yeah.
But for the rest of us that have to work every type of possible room that we can to make a living and pay our bills, you know, the flexibility and versatility, or just being so good and confident, like you said, like owning the room, when you're up there, you get people on your wavelength, you know? Yeah. And that's something I always try to talk about with people, is like, it's like some weird fifth element. Like there's like this energy thing that you can carry on stage that forces an audience to get on your wavelength and connect with you. And once you kind of master that chi or whatever it is, that's how you start getting consistently good. And that all stems from confidence, you know?
Yeah.
So you just really take care of your act and, you know,
that's
your back.
That's great. It's like, don't skip steps. Like, don't skip becoming like a club host or hosting open mics. Are all those skills that you learn when you're a host are essential at every step. It's like, all right, building the energy, reading dips in the room, picking out who's going to be the problem, just keeping an eye on everything that's happening. That's why I still like hosting the shows when I run shows, because it's a way to keep me sharp. Like, how do I get a crowd going if I'm starting from scratch? Or how do I build? Like, hosting's tough. That's why nobody likes to do it. It's like, that's why they call it throwing you to the wolves, because you're going up cold a lot of the time. Yeah. So don't skip that step. And once again, you don't have to not play rooms.
Yeah.
You can be good in those rooms if you take the time to do so. So,
Now, again, to that, you know, if you go play a room and it's a terrible room, it's just set up poorly, you know, the people running it don't know what they're doing. They treat everybody like shit. You don't have to keep doing that room just to get good, you know. I would say definitely don't, you know, don't skip steps. And then also don't think that you're too good to host once that you've moved out of that position. Because, you know, I always think about this, you know, Gary Goldman, who, you know, one of the greatest stand-ups alive, when he went back to Boston, like he was going through his mental health stuff or whatever, he moved back home to Boston. He hosted at the local club and that by request, he was like, I want to host.
Yeah.
So imagine that you are now a couple of years that you just moved up to featuring or whatever, or you're doing a guest spot for the first time and you have to follow Gary Goldman hosting.
Oh, Gary really is mentally ill. Jesus.
But he wanted, but so hosting is like leg day at the gym. Don't skip it.
Don't skip it. Oh, I love it. Yeah. My man's in the gym once. There he's at Planet Fitness once. And
I've
he's like, don't skip
four
leg
times.
Day.
I've gone four times since the last podcast. I've gone four times. So.
That's good numbers.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Thanks for the question, Juan. Really appreciate it. Hopefully that helps you out with your development and any plateaus that you come up against. If you, dear listener, would like to send us a question for the podcast, you can do that via our Gmail account, which is mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. We do have a couple more questions in the queue, but we'd love to keep that stacked up with plenty of things to tackle here at the podcast. Dwight, where are you this next week, or what's the next show that you want to promote?
I don't think it needs promotion, but I am closing out the finals at the Bloomington Comedy Contest Summer Annual Comedy Attic Contest Thursday, August 31st. So if there's tickets left, you should go to that. And then I got some don't tells coming up in the next few weeks, so I'm not going to tell you until next week.
Okay.
They're on my website.
Yeah.
I'm telling. If
you really need to know. I did see a mutual friend of the podcast. I won't say who, but someone posted about a don't tell and who the headliner was. And I'm like, wow, they are really messing the key element of the don't tell. Like, make sure you're coming up to see so-and-so famous headliner at don't tell. Like, yeah, that's kind of like the whole opposite of what they're trying to do there, dog.
Very uncool.
Yeah. The only thing that I have coming up is I will be at Comedy Corner Underground in September 15th and 16th. Would love to pack that out, particularly since last time was so rough because it was the state fair and also Labor Day. September 15th, 16th, those tickets, I believe, are set on. They should be on sale at their website and linked on mine by the time this posts. Thank you everybody for listening to the podcast. We did a little Eminem talk. I want to throw in more like little music reference then.
Please.
I'm going to take my brother to his appointments, and his cardiologist is Dr. Sweat.
What a cool ass name.
No relation to Keith Sweat.
What a cool ass name for a cardiologist.
I know. I didn't ask him if he was related, but I could just kind of tell.
Gonna make you sweat.
Yeah, he just didn't have that same sort of sexiness as Keith Sweat, you know?
Oh, I love it.